Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Trump on trial.
It's a rigged trial, and the whole world is watching.
As Donald Trump makes history in the courtroom, Biden spends the week on the trail.
He's coming for your money, your health care, and your Social Security, and we're not going to let it happen.
How will Trump's case reshape the race? Plus, an exclusive interview with Vice President Harris. And Johnson in jeopardy.
This is embarrassing. He's doing nothing but serving the Democrats.
It's a slap in the face to America.
New behind-the-scenes details.
Congress is finally getting its act together.
As Speaker Johnson takes on his right flank.
He did the right thing. It's a real profile and courage what he did.
But will it cost him his job? Plus, end of an era. Our exclusive sit-down with two Senate dealmakers.
You gotta lower the temperature, not raise the temperature.
Will they support Biden or Trump?
You think Biden's to blame for the border?
Where we are today, the crisis we have, yes.
Inside Politics, the best reporting from inside the corridors of power, starts now.
Good morning, and welcome to Inside Politics Sunday. I'm Manu Raju. The stage has now been set for a historic week. The jury impaneled in Donald Trump's first of four criminal cases, an opening statement set to begin in about 24 hours. All a first for an ex-president now in the thick of a hugely consequential presidential election. As he stands accused of falsifying records in a hush money scheme to silence his alleged mistress before the 2016 elections. Trump, of course, has pleaded not guilty. The case adds a dose of uncertainty into an already tumultuous and closely contested presidential race. Now, Trump is required to come to court whenever it is in session, and that trial could last 5 to 7 more weeks. In the meantime, the former president has been on a rampage, as he made clear in more than about a dozen social media posts about presidential immunity and his ongoing trial, and that is just yesterday alone. Now, Trump's weekday campaign has now been relegated to his quick speeches in the courtroom hallway in front of the press rather than in front of rally crowds.
So this is an outrage that this case was brought. This is political persecution. We think we have a very conflicted, highly conflicted judge. He shouldn't be on the case. I'm supposed to be in Georgia. I'm supposed to be in North Carolina, South Carolina. I'm supposed to be in a lot of different places campaigning. But I've been here all day. The judge wants us to go as fast as possible. This is really a concerted witch hunt. Very simple.
Now, it remains to be seen if Trump has violated his gag order with any of his remarks about the case. That's what prosecutors are alleging, and a hearing for that is set for Tuesday. Now, let's break this all down with our great panel this morning. Sungmin Kim from the Associated Press, John Bresnahan from Punchbowl News, and Olivia Nuzzi from New York Magazine. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
A lot to digest, a lot to get to through the course of this busy hour. Olivia, I want to start with you because you actually have been in the courtroom. Watching Donald Trump as they began the jury selection process, what has been your observation about how he has dealt with this, especially as they're raising some of these salacious details and they've gone through the jury selection process? How has he been dealing with this in the courtroom?
I don't think any criminal defendant is happy to be there, in fairness, but he seems particularly not happy to be there. He seems to have a very difficult time sitting there and doing nothing all day long. And it sort of seems like he's chomping at the bit to get out of there, to the extent that he was reprimanded by the judge when he tried to jump up out of his seat at the end of his session on Friday and leave. Apparently the judge leaves first. I did not know this, and neither did Donald Trump. And he seems very frustrated and sort of depressed. And it was interesting when he got to his, when he was circling his rally in North Carolina last night, and he couldn't land, and he told the crowd there that they would have to go home due to weather. He kept apologizing to them and saying, "I'm sorry," and he sounded very sad. And I thought, I've never heard Donald Trump say, "I'm sorry," before about anyone, to any, about any topic.
Right.
It's it seems like he's struggling on an emotional level.
And we got a lot more time with it, and he'll have to sit in the courtroom. We'll see how he continues to deal with it. And, of course, there's how the voters will deal with it, which is, of course, the most important thing as we assess the impact that this could have on the election. We're going to get really deep into that through the course of this hour. But just a real sense of this from AP poll that came out just a couple weeks ago, right before the trial began. Whether they believe that Trump acted illegally, and look at the cases here, four criminal cases, of course. The hush money case is the lowest among registered voters about whether they believe he was acted illegally in the case. And the question, too, how are you paying attention to Trump's legal cases? 62% say a lot or some paying attention to Trump's cases. We'll see how much more that increases as this trial really begins in earnest this week. And then, of course, the big question, the outcome, the verdict. What happens if Donald Trump is convicted in this case? Here, 22% of independent voters say he is fit to be president if he is convicted. Of course, though, he could be acquitted. I mean, the question always in these polls are if he's convicted. There could be a hung jury. Right. He could be acquitted. This could be the only case that comes to a verdict before, right. And that could have an impact. It just shows you the unpredictability of how this will all play out.
Right. And another fascinating point about that poll, you mentioned there's only about a third of voters who thought he did something illegal in this particular case, where close to half of voters think he did illegal on the other three cases. So you do see how, at least in the court of public opinion, this particular criminal case isn't seen particularly as seriously as the other charges he's facing in the district, in Florida, and in Georgia, which is, I think, partly why the prosecutors have tried to brand this not as a hush money case, but more an election interference case, to try to bring kind of the gravity of this, of these charges, of what Trump is facing, more to the public eye. But I do think it'll be really interesting to see what happens if there is a verdict and if that verdict is guilty. Obviously, it could go through a lengthy appeals process as well. But, you know, of the poll that you mentioned, 47% of independents did say that this would make him unfit to serve. You know, the Democrats and Republicans are in their partisan corners even on that question, but we're really watching the independents here. And 47 should be a warning, should be at least an alarming number for Donald Trump.
And will his party abandon him? That's another question, right, too. At the moment, there's really no indication of that. Many of them are aligning themselves with Trump, have said that he is the victim of unfair prosecution. I put the question, actually, to a lot of Republicans over the past couple weeks, not just about whether about the trial, but really about the underlying allegations about hush money payments to silence someone he was allegedly having an extramarital affair with, and whether they had any concerns about just the underlying allegations themselves.
Does it raise any character issues with the former president?
I mean, it's nothing that I would engage in.
It always bothers me when politicians are alleged to have done things that are unseemly.
It's a salacious trial. It makes for good television on this. This is a throwback to the Clinton administration.
If he gets convicted, will you still support him?
You're talking about a hypothetical that we can talk about if it becomes real at some point in the future.
I've made my views known about these and related topics a lot over the years, so I don't have anything more to add. But thank you for the question.
Well, at least he thanked me for the question.
He's very polite.
He's the one who does oppose, not supporting Donald Trump. But just, President, you talk to all these Republicans as well. Will there be, if he's convicted, how will they respond to this? Trump will say he's going to appeal it. I would guess they're going to align themselves with Trump's messaging on the trial.
100%. For better or worse, they have to stay with Trump through the election. I mean, and their fate is his fate. So, you know, they'll just say, if he's convicted, they'll say a partisan Democrat, district attorney in Manhattan, pursued a case that the feds wouldn't go after, the Justice Department wouldn't go after, and they got a political verdict in a political case, and that's it. I mean, what Trump has done, you have to give him credit in this sense, tactically or politically. He's tried to make the New York case about Bragg, about Alvin, the DA, Alvin Bragg, and about the process, instead of he was paying off a porn star in the White House as president of the United States. I mean, we don't get to that enough. It's like, you know, and the other thing, he's the other big thing for him, though, he's got Michael Cohen. He's is the middleman, and Michael Cohen is a very troubled witness. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. Yeah. And, you know, it's a difficult case.
Yeah.
You could see with the you could see what the jurors went through, these poor people who are going to have to sit in judgment of this. That's what was extraordinary to me from the outside.
Yeah.
Is that, that so? And then I don't think the Republicans are going anywhere.
And this is this, you know, as we look at the campaign, the impact on the campaign, clearly this is having an impact both on his calendar and on his money. Just on the calendar, that this is going to take, you know, about, you know, potentially till early June. And so, you know, Trump does most of his rallies on the weekends anyway, so maybe it doesn't really have an impact on the rallies, but this is where we're consuming his time. And then on the money, just new numbers that just came out from one of his PACs about the legal fees that were spent. $3.7 million as total spent as of the end of March on legal fees. That's from his, one of his PACs. I mean, clearly this is having an impact on the campaign.
It is. I mean, I've joked that it's sort of like the campaign and the court are sharing custody of Donald Trump, right? He's there on Mondays and Tuesdays. He's off on Wednesdays. He's off on weekends, and he's planning these rallies. I've noticed he is planning some in the tri-state area. It seems like they're trying to kind of maybe contain it a little bit. He's doing one in Wildwood, New Jersey. You can go to the boardwalk after, perhaps, if you feel like it. And I don't know how he's going to have the stamina. And when your argument against the incumbent president is he doesn't have the stamina, and you are being witnessed hobbling out of court most days of the week, I think it makes it much more difficult to make that type of political argument against President Biden.
Yeah. Okay. Coming up, we have more to talk about. What do past Trump voters really think about his legal troubles? Will it sway their votes? Will it heal for them? And new reporting ahead on Speaker Johnson's maneuvering to steer a massive foreign aid package through the House. The MAGA base and former President Trump are in lockstep on this point. They believe his criminal cases are grossly unfair and that he is the victim. But what about other Republicans and the wider electorate, many of whom he'll have to secure win to over to secure another 4 years in the White House? Republican strategist Sarah Longwell is here to help answer that question. She's the publisher of the conservative website The Bulwark and the founder of Republican Voters Against Trump. And she's been holding focus groups of voters to hear their thoughts on all things 2024. Olivia Nuzzi is still here to help us break us all down. Good morning, Sarah. Thank you for joining us. So you've been running these focus groups. Can you just quickly explain how you're conducting these focus groups and just what your big takeaway is here?
Yeah, so I do at least one or two focus groups every single week. I talk to swing voters, I talk to Democrats and progressives, but I really focus on sort of two-time Trump voters and people who are either, they voted for Trump before and they're out on him, or, you know, swing voters who maybe voted for Biden but are backsliding. Like, I'm really trying to figure out who as part of this election is going to be sort of the determinant voter and how they're thinking about things. And the number one takeaway that I have is there's this group called the double haters or the double doubters or the pox on both their houses, right? They are frustrated with Biden. Maybe they voted for him last time, but they are right-leaning, independent, soft GOP voters, and they're not loving the job he's doing. But also, they do not want to vote for Trump. And so teasing out how that voter is going to go is of deep interest to me.
Yeah, and that's a hugely consequential. I just wanted you viewers to listen to Arizona women who you talked to, your group talked to on Thursday.
What do we need to know about Trump? How many allegations, how many criminal suits have to come up before he is no longer somebody that we want to consider as running the country?
It's just a collective of all the cases. It speaks volumes about his character.
It's bizarre that he's going to be on the ballot.
Exactly. It's insane.
It embarrasses me, honestly.
Now, again, these are Trump 2016 voters, Biden 2020 voters, swing voters in Arizona, Arizona women. It's consistent with the national polling on this issue. New York Times, Siena College poll recently said, do they believe the hush money charges are serious? Men, 45%. Women, 70% of women. I think that's serious. What do you think?
So here's what's happening with women on this case is it reminds them of one of the things that they really dislike about Donald Trump, which is that they think he's gross to women. And so for, I think, men, and even sometimes just for the broader electorate, one of the reasons they take this case less seriously is because oftentimes when people talk about it, they're saying porn star. Mm-hmm. And so everybody's like, oh, well, that just doesn't sound that serious. Sounds like one of Trump's sort of antics. But for these women, one of the reasons that they switched their votes from Trump to Biden back in 2020 is that they thought that Trump had bad character and created chaos and was gross to women. And so this highlights and reinforces it for them. And so they take it more seriously.
And is the Trump campaign doing anything about the fact that there are so many women voters who are concerned about these character
issues. They can't change his personality. They can't change his personal history that we're all deeply aware of. They are trying to focus on Bragg. They're trying to focus on a quote-unquote witch hunt. They're doing their best to take the focus off of allegations about his sexual misconduct over the years. And in fact, at the hearing on Friday, part of the conversation was about whether or not it would be okay if, in the theoretical circumstance that Trump does sit for cross-examination, as he said that he would, if it would be okay to ask him about E. Jean Carroll, about various things in his past related to sexual misconduct allegations. Hmm.
And so, look, Trump's martyrdom messaging is clearly working with a significant amount of Republicans. That's something not to discount. Another set of focus group voters here. Two-time general election Trump voters for 2016 and 2020, but who voted for Nikki Haley in the primary this cycle. And what do they think about these charges in these various Trump cases?
This is stuff that happens every day with larger companies and things like that.
It seems to me like liberals in the country are saying, Donald Trump's a criminal. Let's find a crime to pin him with.
I think probably is the most serious is the classified documents one. But then Biden had classified documents, and even Pence ended up with saying, oh, wait, I found one in my house, too, which just makes me think they're all rather careless.
What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, these are people who, look, they don't love Trump. They voted for Nikki Haley in the primary, but they're still, it just shows how deeply the narrative has penetrated among Republicans of all kinds that this is a witch hunt, that Trump uniquely sort of, this is an attempt to take him down, that Democrats are after him. There's a two-tier justice system. I hear this from Republicans across the board. And so that is one of the reasons that Trump has He has some armor against these court cases, which is just the general Republican frame that these are just politically motivated witch hunts against Trump. Mm.
And just looking at the polls about how voters view this, about whether they believe these charges are somewhat very or somewhat believable, 73% actually believe that. That's a Reuters Ipsos poll about in this hush money case. But then the question is, are they serious? And this is consistent with what those voters you're talking to. 64%, still a significant amount, believe it is serious, but it is lower than those other cases, those other three criminal cases.
So much has to go right for this trial to continue to the point where we reach a verdict. Anything could happen that could screw it all up, frankly, for the prosecutors. But if it continues for several weeks, I think day in and day out, conversation about Donald Trump in the courtroom as a criminal defendant, him being kind of pulled off of the campaign trail, not able to stay on whatever his message, not that he really has a message ever that he's sticking to, I'm still waiting for infrastructure week, but his keeping him tethered to the subject of his legal dramas.
Yeah.
I think that's going to have a very negative effect, and people will perceive him as someone who maybe is a criminal.
And the question is if this, you know, how voters will end up viewing this in November if this is done by June.
Well, I'll just say, you know, for right now, there's been so many court cases, he has so many indictments that for the voters, a lot of it tends to be white noise. But as the cases separate out and people follow them individually, you could see these numbers start to shift. Mm-hmm. As people understand, this isn't about a porn star or even hush money. It's about the way he passed these checks.
The big narrative that this is all sort of embroidering is that he is someone who has no respect for the rule of law, who thinks that there is a different set of standards for him, who gets away with things that a lot of his voters in his super base would never be able to get away with. Yeah. And so I think that is very troubling for him in a near evenly divided electorate. Yeah.
Very, very unpredictable. Great discussion. Thank you both. All right, CNN will have special live coverage of the opening statements in former President Trump's hush money trial starting tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern on CNN and streaming on Max. House divided and the speaker's job in jeopardy. How Mike Johnson finally evolved on Ukraine aid and what it could mean for his future with the gavel.
He's going to cause us to lose the majority at this point. He's completely demotivated our base.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The assignment with me, Audie Cornish. So there have been arrests, suspensions, disciplinary hearings. They're shutting down graduation events.
At this moment, the part of the protest that are admirable are young people calling attention to atrocities.
Michael Roth is the president of Wesleyan University.
I would like to make a space for them to do that, as long as that space doesn't prevent other people from pursuing their education.
Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Mike Johnson was not well known when he assumed the speakership 6 months ago. As a staunch social conservative and a skeptic of more Ukraine aid, hardliners thought he would advance their cause. But as he faces the realities of divided Washington and gets access to top secret briefings, his views and tactics have evolved. My new reporting this morning with Annie Grayer and Melanie Zanona highlights how the internal GOP battle unfolded behind the scenes and why Johnson defied his right flank, all the while risking his job on a foreign aid package that includes $61 billion in aid to Ukraine. And he was not afraid to call up House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries to get the job done. And now, hardliners are enraged.
I think every American in this country should be furious. This is the third betrayal by Mike Johnson.
I would characterize Speaker Johnson's handling of Ukraine and all of these other foreign aid bills surrender.
It's the way that they never prioritize center-right Americans' priorities. Never. And that's where we've ended up again. And I think it is pathetic.
It's tough to defend him right now.
It's a slap in the face to America.
Is he showing that he's out of his element here?
Well, what he's showing is that, in my humble opinion, we are allowing Chuck Schumer to run the House of Representatives. And to me, that's very disturbing.
Now, Johnson was torn between those loud voices on his right and the pleas of help from Ukrainian President Zelensky, as well as many in the GOP. Plus, sources say a recent classified CIA briefing helped convince Johnson, as did some prayer.
What changed for him?
Well, he went through a transformation, no question. But also, I think he felt the weight of the world on his shoulders, and it really was falling on him. And I was with him the night before he made the decision. He prayed on it. And the next day, he said, I want to be on the right side of history. And I think he will be.
Now, since hardliners are still pushing to oust him, he'd need Democrats to keep his job. But despite this move on Ukraine, some on the left say they should not help a conservative speaker.
I believe that the Democratic base will have a lot of pointed questions for Democrats who vote to keep Mike Johnson in the Speaker's chair.
Mm-hmm. Backlash?
I think there will be a backlash.
I mean, this has really been a fascinating moment. You really rarely see a politician evolve like this, just really in real time. Typically, people are dug into their positions, especially in this era of politics. One reason why he is in a bit of a pickle with his colleagues is the way the vote came down. The minority of House Republicans voted to approve Ukraine aid. That is 101 Republicans voted yes, 112 voted no. All Democrats voted for it. And it's Johnson's deal cutting over the last 6 months, a speaker that have enraged those folks on the right, whether it's government funding over on this issue of foreign aid bills, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Acts, and the National Defense Authorization Act, too. You've covered Mike Johnson really since he became a member. What is your takeaway from his handling of this?
I honestly am surprised he did the Ukraine bill. For a long time, my colleague Jake Sherman and I would debate this. Is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? And, you know, we thought he wasn't going to do it. And then but Democrats in the White House all thought throughout the process that they were talking to Johnson, they were talking to his top staff, that they had a channel to him and that he was listening to them and that they thought there was a very good chance that he would do this, and he ended up doing it. So, I mean, I was surprised he did it. I do think there will be an attempt to remove him now. That's clearly going to happen. A motion to vacate is what the technical term for it is. You had Marjorie Taylor Greene has already introduced this. She has several named co-sponsors of this, and will Democrats have to vote to really keep him in place? I think I was talking to one Republican yesterday. It's very interesting to me, the whole split inside the Republican Party. This Republican said there will never be another Republican speaker elected, even if they are majority, or at least in the next decade or two, without Democratic support. Mm-hmm. It just won't happen. There will be Republicans will have to have coalition governance because they can't govern and have and be pure.
Yeah.
And, you know, these guys want, they want purity. They want to, and they want to use, they want to fight it out in the election with their guys. They're as angry as Republicans as Democrats are.
Yeah, it's such a good point. You know, one of these congressmen is the leader of the House Freedom Caucus, Bob Good. He's actually opposed to moving forward to oust Mike Johnson, even though he was one of the eight who voted to oust Kevin McCarthy in the fall. And a lot of people blame that vote in the House Republican Conference for the chaos and the dysfunction and really the outcome of some of the policy wins here. I asked him about the all of this and why he is not pushing for Mike Johnson's ouster.
We ended up selecting a candidate who has failed us. So that doesn't mean that now you should take this the same actions that you took in September when you are in a different situation. This is not the time to do that because of the much more narrow margin, the much greater degree of certainty, the fact that I wouldn't want to select someone now, that would be, in my view, probably the less desirable, not the best option perhaps. That would be an incumbent going into November.
Now, what's interesting is that he is now being targeted in his own primary because of his actions and his moves. And one of them is a congressman who's going after him is a member of his own conference, Congresswoman Jen Kiggins, who is actually in a swing district herself.
I think that there's a whole faction, again, of our conference that I don't know why if they're here for the right reasons necessarily. We see what's going on in the world right now. It's not safe. So it frustrates me when we have members of our conference who are isolationists, who don't believe in standing with their allies.
It's this debate over tactics and policy. It's the isolationist wing versus the neocon wing, whatever you want to call it, and it's playing out and it's dividing their party.
Right, and you also wonder if the Freedom Caucus folks, the rabble-rousers, the troublemakers, if you are also starting to learn the fact that when you go from a rank-and-file member to someone in leadership, you are almost inevitably going to change. And we saw that with Mike Johnson basically in real time. He goes from a rank-and-file member who opposed Ukraine aid, goes not only as a leader of House Republicans, but the Speaker of the House, this constitutional role. He gets access to all this classified information. He learns over time that you have to govern. If there is a majority, a big majority of votes for something, you basically have to put it forward. And I'm not sure there might be a few House Republicans who might not behave that way once they're in that leadership position, but I feel like most would at that point. But yes, that divide is certainly going to continue to play out. I mean, that is fueled largely by the views of Donald Trump himself. I'm not sure the opposition to Ukraine would be that strong if Trump himself weren't so strongly against it. But it is it's a long way from the party of Reagan that we've been used to.
Absolutely. And Trump actually did not come out opposed to the bill, which is actually kind of interesting. Right. And also, you know, there was all this sideshow that was going on, these angry exchanges. I've never seen a conference devolve the way this has. And on the floor of the House earlier this week, Mike Johnson was essentially pinned against the back of the wall, according to our colleague Alan Greer, who witnessed this. He was taking fire from the members of the Freedom Caucus. And then there was this exchange between Derek Van Orden, who is a member from Wisconsin, aligned himself with Mike Johnson on this issue, and Matt Gaetz, the leader of the charge to oust Kevin McCarthy.
You called him Tubby, it sounds like.
Actually, I said Kick Rocks Tubby, yeah. So the reason being, Matt Gaetz is a bully. Chip Roy's a bully. Bob Good's a bully. And the only way to stop a bully is to push back hard. The majority of the majority, the vast majority of the majority, is sick and tired of these high school antics.
The only thing I gleaned from it is that Mr. Van Orden is not a particularly intelligent individual.
I mean,
this is, I was standing next to you when you did that. I had to step away because I was laughing.
This is today's Republican conference. Yeah. I mean, and look, and it's also, you have to push back harder. It's just the tactics, and now the belief on the people who aligned themselves with Mike Johnson is just ignore these guys, run over them, stiff arm them, push them to the side.
Yeah, but I mean, to the point, a majority of the Republican conference voted against this bill. They voted against the Ukraine bill. You had Jim Jordan, You had Jody Arrington, budget committee chairman. You had Elise Stefanik, who's the number four House Republican and a possible VP candidate. I mean, there are going to be consequences for Johnson here. We had talked during the week. There was a thought that they could change the House rules to protect Johnson. But he would need Democrats. And we thought he was going to do that at one point, and he backed off. And there were Republicans who were angry with Johnson for not doing it because they're saying, you know, this is part of the chaos in the House that you're not doing.
And the question is, what does this mean in November? There's a debate in the GOP whether it matters. One side says it does. One side says it doesn't.
What do you think, just in general, like the turmoil does to, you know, your ability to hang on to power here?
I don't think it really is going to matter. You know, folks back home are worried about the fact that the things they need for their family cost $15,000 more this year because of Joe Biden and his policies. They're not concerned about, you know, fighting inside the House.
He's going to cause us to lose the majority at this point. He's completely demotivated our base. He's disappointed us in the conference.
Is it costing the majority?
Not Mike Johnson, but Donald Trump may. But Mike Johnson is not going to be the issue. People cost them the House or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the House typically goes on the strength of the top of the ticket. Mm-hmm. And I don't see why it wouldn't necessarily differ this year than in previous years.
All right, we'll see. Maybe Richard Hudson, the House GOP campaign arm chairman, is right. All right, coming up, CNN's exclusive interview with Vice President Kamala Harris. While Trump's in court, she and Biden are all over the map. Their strategy on the trail and what they are and are not saying about their opponent next.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
When I look at the economy, I don't see it through the eyes of Mar-a-Lago. I see it through the eyes of Scranton, and that's not hyperbole. That's a fact.
While Donald Trump spent 4 days in court this week, President Biden spent three on the trail, campaigning in Pennsylvania. It may be a preview of the next 5 to 7 weeks as Trump's trial plays out. And as Biden avoided talk of his rival's legal troubles, Vice President Kamala Harris is following suit. CNN's Isaac Dover just spoke with her in an exclusive interview. And he joins me now, along with Sungmin Kim. Isaac, thanks for being here. So what's your big takeaway from this interview?
Well, look, I spoke with Harris in Las Vegas on Monday after a swing that took her to Tucson to talk about that Arizona abortion law being upheld and really blast it. There is no question there is a sense of energy and looseness that's coming off her. She said to me, I find it very liberating to be out this way, right? That she's talking about that. And you see, like, what struck me in a way is her playlist at events is Beyonce's Freedom and then Aretha Franklin's Respect. Like, sort of get both out of her that she's been looking for. And that's what she is playing into here. She is trying to establish herself, obviously, in a bitter way for herself, but the Biden campaign has seen in lots of research that they've been doing and the way that they've been responding, the voters have been responding, that on issues like abortion, on guns, on a lot of the things that are really important to the base, legalizing marijuana, talking about student loans, that actually voters want to hear from her more even than they want to hear from the president. And she's been playing into that.
That's very interesting. And it's also, they have not been talking about this hush money case. It's been talking, if you mentioned abortion, you mentioned guns, you talk about democracy. This is not about Trump's criminal trials, even though that is consuming all the oxygen here. And just getting a sense on the ads that they have been running in some of these swing states, including in Pennsylvania, targeting key voters. They've struggled with black voters. They're talking about the economy. This is one from Pennsylvania just a couple days ago.
I love to tell the story about meeting President Biden because when you meet him, this guy's as sharp as a knife. They have nothing else to attack because they can't attack the things that he's doing that are so good for this country. Joe Biden gets things done. That's just who he is.
But, you know, the question is, do they talk about it in these cases? I put that question to one senator, Chris Murphy.
I think most people in this country have already processed and baked in the fact that Donald Trump is a reckless idiot. What this election needs to be about is the fact that Donald Trump is going to ban abortion in this country, the fact that electing him will be another gifts to billionaires and millionaires who will get big regulatory and tax breaks. That's what this election has to be about.
Right, right. I mean, if you've been talking with Biden campaign aides for the last several months, they actually don't like talking about Biden's legal, or sorry, Donald Trump's legal troubles. They feel that the more effective contrast between the two candidates is what Trump would do actually in office should he be elected again. So that is why you saw President Biden just really not engage in any sort of these questions. You didn't have Biden campaign surrogates go out there and blast Trump over his legal, over his legal problems with the trial starting formally last week. The campaign made some, like, you know, wink, wink kind of puns in their press releases, but that's pretty much the extent of what they had engaged in, because they really want to focus on what Biden himself is saying. And what he's saying is, again, this is what Trump would do in office. This is why my policies are better than the other guy. And you're going to hear that a lot, especially on Tuesday when he travels to Florida to talk about abortion. It's going to be a big moment for
him. And that's what, essentially, when you were with Harris, that's what she was trying to do as well.
Yeah, and one of the things I get into in the piece is that, look, she has struggled with being vice president. We all know that. It's years of this. But she has actually adapted better to running for vice president in a way that having a target, it fits her way of thinking about things better. She's got a structure, she's got a plan, she's got a goal. And that fervor that's coming off of her now, I said to her, are you ready to take on whoever Trump picks as his running mate? And she said, I'm ready to take on whoever has the fill in the blank to do it, right? Like, that is where she is now. It's a much different Kamala Harris than was there.
Yeah, such interesting. Great piece. I hope you all read it. It sounds on CNN.com. Thank you, guys. Coming up, I caught up with former Senator Rob Portman for his first Sunday show interview since retiring, and his former colleague, Senator Joe Manchin. They have harsh words for their own parties, and neither says if they'll endorse Trump or Biden. That's next. Now, bipartisanship is a dirty word in some circles in Washington, just as Speaker Mike Johnson. So I sat down with two longtime Senate veterans to discuss how they view their parties and what they believe has gone wrong. Democratic West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin is not seeking re-election this year, and he just launched a new group with his daughter called Americans Together. Former Republican Ohio Senator Rob Portman is working on his Portman Center for Policy Solutions at the University of Cincinnati. Now, I spoke with both lawmakers after moderating a panel with them at the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics. They had tough words for their parties and the top of their tickets. But we began by talking about the changing makeup and views of the Senate GOP, such as over Ukraine. Portman, a staunch advocate, was replaced by Republican Senator J.D. Vance, who is furiously opposed.
We agree on a lot. We disagree on some. And one is Ukraine. And we have a strong disagreement there. But I have a disagreement with other colleagues, too, on that. It's not just J.D. There are more Republicans now saying, let's allow Vladimir Putin to have his way. And the consequences of that would be disastrous for our national security.
We talked, Senators, about just the changing nature of the Senate. Are you concerned that the moderates are being drummed out of your party?
What I'm really concerned about is if we lose the filibuster, you won't create any new moderns. You will not have a middle at all. It'll be swinging from the left and the right. That's not who America is. That probably scares me more than anything. Every one of us should be ashamed of what we're living through now in the 118th Congress. Every Congress up until this 118th Congress has basically produced about 500 bills that we could work on and agree on and pass some form of a piece of legislation, 500 to 520. We've only passed 69 bills.
When you look at this this Congress from the outside, are they doing their job?
Well, no, in the sense that Congress isn't doing much legislating, and they've been rather dysfunctional. The border policy, I think, has become sort of the poster child of what I'm talking about, that it's hard to solve policy issues these days because both the right and the left seem to get some advantage from things being unsolved.
You clearly disagreed with Senate Republicans blocking that bipartisan border security deal.
I think it was a step in the right direction. Incrementally, it was a perfect no. But let's face it, we haven't done anything since 1986 in this area. It's a disaster on the border. To deal with the asylum issue as they did, I thought was incredibly important.
Did you think Trump just wanted this issue? That's why he killed this?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Part of it was some substantive differences. But here's the deal. It was incrementally good for the country.
Are you comfortable with him as the nominee?
Well, it's not my decision to make.
You're an Ohio voter.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely going to be the nominee. I would imagine that he has a very good chance of being president, too.
Are you going to vote for him?
Well, I'm looking at the policies.
You haven't made a decision yet.
I'm not going to vote for President Biden.
Was it the right decision, do you think, to impeach Mayorkas?
No. My problem with that impeachment is that if you were to impeach somebody for following the policy direction of the White House rather than focusing on the White House, then you're going to have that happen again and again, tit for tat.
Make no mistake about it, I think Joe Biden has been has done a bad job on the border. Now, with that being said, and he's to blame for the border.
You think Biden's to blame for the border?
He made the decision. It opened up and they haven't closed it down. He has to take blame for what is wrong, but he's accepting it now to fix it, and then it's not being fixed because of politics. That's what people don't like.
Are you going to vote for President Biden?
I'm not going to vote for President Trump. And I've known Joe Biden for a long time. And it's not the Joe Biden I'm seeing today, the way he's being pulled so far left by his administration. I want to see him take charge again. I want the President Biden to be the president when he was running in 2020.
That's not a yes or no. I mean, yes, do you want him to win?
I don't want Trump to win.
So then you guess you want Biden to win. Then,
I don't
right?
want President Trump. I love my country too much.
Do you look back in the two impeachment votes that you had with Trump and regret any of your votes to acquit him?
No, I mean, I would apply the same standard. In other words, President Trump was not in office, which I think is not constitutional, which I think is not what the founders intended.
This is after January 6th.
Yeah.
Have we reached the bottom of American politics?
I think that the fever will break here, and I think that the parties, you know, don't represent the country anymore.
Shouldn't you, you know, as you're retiring, stuck around and try to fix these problems?
I've been 42 years. How long do you want me to stick?
All right. And that's it for Inside Politics Sunday. You can follow me on X at MK Raju. You can follow the show at Inside Politics. And if you ever miss an episode, of course, you can catch up wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Inside Politics. Now, up next, State of the Union with Jake Tapper and Dana Bash. Dana's guests include South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. Thanks again for sharing your Sunday morning with us. We'll see you next time.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.